The Clean Power Hour is brought to you by CPS America, the maker of North America's number one three-phase string inverter, with over 6 gigawatts shipped in the U.S. The CPS America product lineup includes three-phase string inverters ranging from 25 to 275 kW. Their flagship inverter, the CPS250-275, is designed to work with solar plants ranging from 2 megawatts to 2 gigawatts. The 250-275 pairs well with CPS America's exceptional data communication, controls, and energy storage solutions. Go to chintpowersystems.com to find out more.
My message kind of is to those, you know, the NABCEP certified installer who maybe isn't doing storages, you know, that's definitely, you need to be doing storage. You need to be feeling comfortable with storage. That is the way that we're moving. That's the industry. That's the future of the industry. It's almost the present of the industry. So in order to, you know, truly get up to speed, you know, of course, you know, education is going to be one of my first things. Education from ourselves. You mentioned some great organizations. And then, you know, quite honestly, one of the other big things is engaging with partners who do have that experience and being able to help you. So
are you speeding the energy transition? Here at the Clean Power Hour, our hosts Tim Montague and John Weaver bring you the best in solar, batteries, and clean technologies every week. Want to go deeper into decarbonization? We do too. We're here to help you understand and command the commercial, residential, and utility solar, wind, and storage industries. So let's get to it. Together, we can speed the energy transition.
Today on the Clean Power Hour, making solar and storage expertise accessible. I'm Tim Montague, your host. Check out all of our content at cleanpowerhour.com. Give us a rating and a review on Apple and Spotify, and tell a friend about the show. Also love to hear from my listeners. You can reach out to me at cleanpowerhour.com or find me on LinkedIn. I love to connect with my listeners, so do that. Today, my guest is Ryan Mayfield of Mayfield Renewables. He is a very storied renewable energy engineer and trainer and expert, and I'm just so excited to bring you onto the show, Ryan. Welcome.
Thank you. Thanks, Tim. I really appreciate it, and thanks for having me. Love the show.
You might be wondering, how do C&I solar PPAs get financed? For many, it remains a mystery. For others, there's Conductor. Conductor Solar helps hundreds of developers and EPCs find investors, close transactions, and collaborate effectively. With competitive bids from high-quality partners, Conductor makes sure you and your customers get the best PPA deal every time. Free to use for developers and EPCs? Visit conductor.solar today. It was great to get to meet you face-to-face at InterSolar last week in San Diego. That's always nice to shake somebody's hand. But you have a quite a storied history. You're probably, I would just venture to say, in the 1% of experience level professionals in the solar energy industry, which is great. So if you're listening to this, stick around. You're in for a treat. And of course, check out Ryan's website at mayfield.energy. But Ryan, tell us a little bit about your backstory. How old were you when you got interested in energy engineering? And how did you find your way into solar and storage?
So yeah, thanks, Tim. And I appreciate that. And so yeah, so I was, you know, I got hooked on solar renewables when I was, you know, still in college. So this was the late 90s when I was finishing up my school. I did an engineering program and, you know, kind of got hooked on solar there. Got to do a course with Solar Energy International. They came to the town where I was up in Northern California where I was going to school. So got very, very lucky. Did a Take Your Bedroom Off the Grid was the name of the course that we did. So we put, you know, I forget what it was, 3 or 4 75-watt modules on somebody's roof, some L16 batteries. So it's just kind of that's where it all got started for me. And I got basically got hooked.
What year was that?
That would have been 98. That would have been.
Yeah.
And
so we were doing less than a megawatt a year in the U.S. of solar. Now we're doing 30 gigawatts plus a year. I think we did 33 is the official number for 2023. So the solar industry has truly exploded in the decades since then. The modern era really started, I think, in 2010. But anyway, keep going. How did your career progress from there?
Yeah. No, that's great. And so from there, moved to Colorado, followed my now wife out to Colorado and got a job as an installer. I was just telling somebody this story actually at Intersolar, where I got to do a guest judging of the solar games, which was super exciting, lots of fun. And so kind of was remembering that. So doing installations basically as an apprentice before there was even an apprenticeship program set up in Colorado. So, you know, crawling through attics, crawling through crawl spaces, digging ditches, all the good stuff, you know, actually, you know, connecting modules. This was pre-MC connectors as well. So, you know, learning all the wiring and all that kind of stuff. So it was a really great, hands-on experience for me. So did that for a few years and then moved out to Oregon. And that's where I started working with Bob Maynard. He had a company that was a distribution company. So we were focused 100% on renewables. So we were a distribution company in the world of renewables when there were very, very few of those folks. And so we were, you know, Sharp modules and SMA inverters. So this would have been the early 2000s. That was our big, and the other part was Outback inverters. So we had a UL 508A shop. So we would take actually the components, mostly Outback, but other components, and assemble them there in our shop and build power panels for folks and then ship them out to the field. And they would put them up on the walls.
And I'll just shine a light on some of the brands you've mentioned here. Sharp, obviously a Japanese brand, SMA, a German brand, but Outback, I think, is an American company, right?
Yeah, 100%. They were folks that had been working for Trace Engineering, which then became Xantrax and now Schneider. And so kind of that progression, but they left Trace, started their own company. They were doing inverters and charge controllers. And so, yeah, they were 100% American, just north of Seattle.
Yeah. And solar and storage was part and parcel, right, of the early solar industry, because it was a lot of off-grid applications. Behind the meter solar wasn't a thing so much. It was really all about off-grid back in the early days, where you had some remote operation and a need for power. Solar was very expensive. I mean, I don't know if you have a per watt figure to give us at that time, but certainly, you know, maybe 10x what it is, you know, at least today.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I wouldn't even remember, but yeah, I mean, modules alone were so much more expensive than, you know, as a system as a whole, what we're selling today.
So that, you know, that's one of the things that makes technology like solar go mainstream is that cost adoption curve, right? We've drastically reduced the price of the technology and we've vastly increased the amount of consumption globally. And, you know, the US is what, maybe 10% of the global solar market, but anyway, it's a vibrant market. It's the fastest growing source. Solar is the fastest growing source of of grid power now in the United States. And wind is right behind it. Wind is a little ahead of us in the greater scheme, but we're you know, now solar has kind of eclipsed wind. And we're going to have the writing is on the wall that we're going to have a 50% solar grid by 2050. And we'll have a 40% wind grid by 2050. So wind and solar will be 90% of the grid in 23 years, which is kind of hard to believe, but yes, that is happening. And and not a moment too soon, right? We have to net zero the economy to try to put the brakes on runaway climate change. I would be remiss if I didn't remind my listeners, though, that net zeroing the economy is just part of the problem. That's 40 gigatons of pollution. There's a trillion tons, 25x that, in the atmosphere already that put us to 420 ppm. And so we also have to think in parallel about decarbonizing the atmosphere. One of the things I love about working in solar, Ryan, is that there are so many people that care about the environment and sustainability, mission-driven entrepreneurs and professionals, and that's very much what I am and who my listeners are. So let's keep going. Let's jump to the modern day. Like, what are you about now, and what are you best known for?
Sure. So yeah, so 2007 is when I started the company, and I started doing, you know, solar engineering was you know, first and foremost out of the gate, what we were doing. I was also doing education at the same time. And so both of those things hold true today. It's, you know, very much the core of what Mayfield Renewables is. And so I went out on my own and started doing, you know, working with EPCs, doing system design and engineering work for them. And then at the same time, I was doing classes. So I was teaching a two-year degree, or part of a two-year degree program. I shouldn't say phrase it like I was doing the whole thing. I had a solar focus course, set of courses in a two-year renewable energy program that was down in Eugene, Oregon. And so I was doing that at the same time. It was a great mix for me of education and then actually doing, you know, doing the engineering work in the field and, you know, progress through the years. And so now we are, Mayfield Renewables is doing a large amount of the large, you know, biggest part of our business is the engineering side. And so we are engineering solar and storage systems with a major focus on energy storage, more complex systems. So microgrids, resiliency systems, those are the things that we really, you know, strive to do. And we're working with our clients to provide those services. And so that's part of our, you know, expertise, making that available through the engineering. And then I also love doing educating. I love talking to people. Codes and standards is a big thing for me. This past year, I was able to get on the code making panel. So the National Electrical Code, I'm on code making panel 13 now with Justine Sanchez. And so that code making panel is responsible for Article 706, amongst others. For the listeners, you know, familiar with National Electrical Code, 706 is the energy storage section of electrical code. So, you know, I love talking with that. And so we are at Mayfield Renewables, we're doing a lot of educating for folks. And so we have courses on our own website, go to conferences, you know, provide education for our clients directly in various ways through, you know, direct courses. And again, on the pre-recorded type courses as well. And then the final thing that we're doing that we love working with, and this gets into the education part even more, is working with manufacturers when they're bringing products to market. And we're really doing it through the lens of education. So we're educating people, educating their consumers on, you know, their products, and helping that really helps the manufacturers as well understand, you know, what do they need to include in their products. We have so many new energy storage products coming to market. So it's pretty easy for manufacturers to kind of miss the mark, quite honestly, and bring something that they think is going to be useful, but maybe that's already been tried and, you know, proven in the field that it isn't necessarily required, or vice versa. They think they're going to leave something out and it's like, no, we actually need this. That disconnect, for example, is really important because of code.
So here we are, we've come full circle in the solar industry where battery storage is integral. It is vital in certain markets. It makes solar pencil in some markets like California now, under NEM 3.0. Here in Illinois, we have very good incentives for battery storage. And batteries provide what we call a value stack, which is geographically specific. It's specific to the geography, the incentives, the utility, etc. So it is complicated, but it's also not rocket science. It's like, yeah, the battery is a sponge. It can absorb energy from the solar array or from the grid, and then it can give energy or deliver energy to the facility or to the grid, depending on what you want to do. And so you can provide local value in the form of resiliency, right? If the grid goes down, you can microgrid and have power for your facility, but you can also provide grid services with a battery, frequency regulation, for example, or be part of a virtual power plant. And okay. And grid operators, as you know, as solar becomes a bigger and bigger part of the grid, grid operators are going to love storage because it's just so valuable. That stack is so valuable and flexible. Solar is very one-dimensional. It's on or off, right? It's either producing when the sun is shining and it's not, or it's not. And I love solar. It's cool because it, you know, at fundamentally is free photons from the sun being converted to clean electrons. Once you have the technology installed, you have free electricity. So now batteries are kind of going mainstream again in the solar industry. And if you're a solar professional and you're not involved with storage, you absolutely need to get involved, educate yourself, take Ryan's classes, go to HeatSpring, check out the courses on HeatSpring, check out Sean White's work, check out my work, and start dipping your toe in the water and start doing battery projects, because your customers are going to want them. And
when I would say they're even starting to require them or ask for them. So we're working with some clients right now where it's co-ops, for example. So they're power co-ops that are putting out RFPs that for solar plus storage, and in some cases, storage only projects. And so they see that value, as you're talking about there. Solar is great, but it's not, you can't count on the solar to be, you know, hitting at the right time and reducing that demand and providing that grid service. And so it's pretty exciting times in terms of that is, you know, what we're seeing being almost demanded from the industry as well. So
I'm curious if we could have a conversation, Ryan, that kind of walks through the early stages of a solar and storage project and the things that a facility owner or an EPC, an installer, needs to be thinking about, the questions that need to be asked. And I understand that it is geographically specific, but pick one of your favorite markets and let's just walk through kind of what are the considerations. One of the, you know, there's always the backdrop of money, and money is super important and powerful and super influential. If a project doesn't pencil well, if it doesn't generate ROI well, it's not going to get off the ground. And that's a major factor, because batteries are not free. But anyway, let's walk through kind of what are the major considerations for a behind-the-meter solar and storage project that might have the capability to to an island from the grid.
Sure. And that's exactly the types of projects that we're focused in on ourselves right now. So providing resiliency. And so one of the things you mentioned, you know, the budget, always that's going to be, you know, one of the very first things has to come up, understanding, you know, what is the budget, what's even possible with the budget that you have. But I would say for us, you know, we're doing a lot of this work here. I sit in the Northwest. Our employees were spread out across the country, but we're very, fortunate in terms of where we're located and just the people we've gotten to know and things. But one of the common projects is this resiliency type, be able to work, have the power go out and still provide power. So one of the very first questions we have to always ask is what is it that you're trying to accomplish? Are you trying to, you know, back up the whole building? Is there a subset of critical loads? What is your desire as a client, as the system owner? So being able to understand what that is. And sometimes that means setting expectations or lowering expectations. Like, of course, I want to back up my whole facility, but I have a limited budget. And so we're going to, you know, talk about, well, what are those loads? And then being able to understand what they are. In a perfect world, when we are doing this, you know, we're doing a feasibility study. That's a big part of what we offer as a service. And so coming in and really looking at those loads, even monitoring them if we can. So very often it's going to be a subset of loads. You may have your green button data, even you may have your demand charges, things like that, but that's for the facility as a whole. And if you're doing some subset, we need to be able to, you know, parse those out, meter those separately. So that's ideally what we're going to be able to do. And then be able to understand from there, what are the components that are going to meet you at where you need to be, but doing a technology and a economic model on that. And so understanding, putting all of those components into a model and being able to return that in a report form to the customer saying, here's what the dollars and cents look like, here's what the kilowatt hours look like, and here's what your ROI is and how it's going to, you know, affect your system as a whole, you know, for the next 10, 15, 20 years.
Let me stop you there for a second.
Yeah.
So, you know, most commercial solar installers would use a tool like Energy Toolbase on a daily basis for modeling solar and now potentially solar and storage. But are there tools that you recommend besides Energy Toolbase for this basic, financial assessment of the value of solar and storage?
Yeah, so the one that we've leaned into is Zendy. And so Zendy is a modeling software where we can do both the financial and the technology type modeling on it. We've also used Homer Grid specifically.
Yep.
And so those are a couple of programs that we've used. And being able to, you know, put those inputs in, and then as my folks will, you know, we're actually going to be talking about this later in a webinar of our own, talking about, you know, this being an iterative process. So you're going to put those inputs in, you're going to have a conversation with the engineering and with the owners, and it might change a little bit. And then you're going to go back and you're going to tweak those inputs, and you're going to see how they come back out. And so it's a great process and being able to, you know, go through those steps in order to deliver what the customer really needs for their system.
The Clean Power Hour is brought to you by CPS America, the maker of North America's number one three-phase string inverter, with over 6 gigawatts shipped in the U.S. The CPS America product lineup includes three-phase string inverters ranging from 25 to 275 kW. Their flagship inverter, the CPS250-275, is designed to work with solar plants ranging from 2 megawatts to 2 gigawatts. The 250-275 pairs well with CPS America's exceptional data communication, controls, and energy storage solutions. Go to chintpowersystems.com to find out more. And one of the things that's now on the landscape also, or in the landscape, is EV infrastructure, right?
Yes.
More and more people are installing EV chargers and driving EVs. Mm-hmm. And the EV is a very interesting platform because it's a battery on wheels. You know, a Model Y, just for a point of reference, you know, has about 120 kilowatt hour battery in it. That 120 kilowatt hour battery is a big battery. Like an off-grid home, a small off-grid home might use a 30 kilowatt hour battery and a big solar array, you know, 20 kilowatt or 30 kilowatt hour, or sorry, 20 or 30 kilowatt solar array. So you've got 4x of a robust resi storage,
right,
battery in a Model Y Tesla. And they get smaller or bigger, of course, as the EV gets bigger or smaller. And does a tool like Zendy allow you to do any kind of vehicle to grid modeling as well?
At this moment, I can't speak to that. I'm not sure if Zendy is doing that, but that's definitely something that's coming up more and more in terms of the conversations, in being able to understand, you know, what are those sources. And so that is, you know, one of the big benefits, you know, as far as Zendy is concerned, as far as the modeling platforms are concerned, you're going to have a battery bank of a certain size. So the big question there is, you know, is that vehicle always available, or is it available when when you really need it, or is it, you know, do they drive it off and it's not at that site? So that's one of the things, and that's one of the beautiful parts of the modeling, is being able to put in, you know, hey, we have this size kilowatt hour battery, but if it were to not be there, or, you know, not be available, you could model that as well. So so specific to, you know, vehicle to grid, I'm not 100% sure, but you could also just say it's a battery that's available to you. And the other thing that's really great is being able to integrate other sources. So, you know, generators, for example, a lot of these locations that we're going into, it might be a campus, it might be a healthcare facility, or a, you know, larger campus. They already have generator or generators that are already backing up their sites. And so they are wanting to use solar plus storage to extend that time period. So here in the Northwest, we're expecting a earthquake event that the prediction is that we're going to have 2 weeks without power. And that might even be a little on the conservative. We might be even longer. So, you know, for a facility, if they have a generator, but that generator was designed to get them through 3 days, you know, you got another 11 days at least. And so this is a way of incorporating a resource or resources to work in conjunction with that and extend your fuel runtime. So you don't have to run the generator all the time. And now all of a sudden that 3 days becomes much longer on the generator. And so that's one of the really fun parts too of the modeling, is being able to play with those types of parameters.
Yeah. And in terms of your customer base, paint us a broad strokes picture. It sounds like you're working with facility owners and then but also other developers and installers? And what are the percentages roughly?
Yeah. So, you know, on the engineering side, and I'll lump in feasibility studies kind of into that side of it as well. That's really kind of consulting. But if we kind of put all of that together, you know, we are working with EPCs are far and away, you know, our largest percentage of our clients, but we're working with more and more developers on getting those on the front end of those systems. And then with the, you know, the facility owners, very often we're getting called in earlier into the process, even into the, they might be receiving grants or might be going after some grants to do this. And so that's a very popular thing here in the Northwest. Oregon and Washington have some grant programs. And so working with entities like municipalities, county governments, you know, irrigation districts, those kinds of things. And so those are kind of the three level or the, you know, kind of tiered folks who we're working with in order to deliver these products.
Gotcha. So what else should an EPC be thinking about, you know, diving into solar and storage? And I guess, where do you see the most traction and the flip side of that, where projects are falling apart? What is it that works well and what is it that falls apart?
So for us, I would say, you know, we as a company are really focused on the C&I or the mid-market solar. So we're, you know, looking at, you know, hundreds of kilowatts of PV projects up to, you know, multi-megawatt projects. We're very much purposely not, you know, trying to get into the utility scale. So that kind of is its own world, if you will, but we're seeing a lot of traction on the utility side, utility scale, you know, huge hundreds of megawatts and hundreds of megawatt hours in terms of storage. One of the areas that we're really because we're focusing on C&I, one of the things that we're seeing is, you know, really helping people understand what are the products available. So C&I is a growing part of the market, but it's not, you know, when you look at the numbers, of course, utility is going to be, you know, dwarfing everything else just by the sheer numbers. Yep. When we look at, you know, installed capacity and things like that. And of course, when we have, you know, 100 megawatt fields of solar, that's going to be pretty easy to dwarf everything else. So availability of products and products that actually work well together. And that's a question we get all the time is in the C&I space, what batteries are you using? What inverters are you using? What's working well? And so that's why going to a show like InterSolar is great for us, especially, you know, seeing what's out there, you know, who's coming to market with what products and being able to integrate everything together. So I would say that's one of the areas, you know, we're seeing it grow, and I don't want to say necessarily falling apart, but it's making sure that those components are working together. And I would say what we have seen in some projects is where it's not very well thought out on the front end. It's a, they'll put in a PV system and a battery system, maybe just based on some rough back of the napkin calculations. And then they get to install it and they're, oh, these don't go together. Or we need a controller. The BMS doesn't talk to the inverter and all these kinds of these different hiccups. And so it's one of those, got to make sure that all those components are compatible, going to work together. And then in the end, deliver what the client wants. Because if you install something and it just doesn't deliver what it might be, those grid services like you talked about, it might be a resiliency for a couple of weeks. So making sure that you're hitting those targets.
Yeah, this is an aspect of solar and storage that is very deep water, frankly. And you have to be very careful because some manufacturers, the one who's kind of famous for this, I think, is Tesla, where they sell the full wrap, right? Mm-hmm. They sell the battery, but also all of the hardware and software and the containerized solution that is space conditioned and ready to drop in. Okay. That's one end. And then you have the other end where people will just sell you battery packs that you then, you know, modularize and install with a bunch of other stuff yourselves. Exactly. Or with some other integrator. And there are mm-hmm. companies that, you know, are specialized as integrators. They'll bring a container to the solution. They'll bring a software platform. They'll bring a charge controller, et cetera, et cetera. And apples and oranges. I don't know, in the greater scheme of things, Ryan, do you see a trend or do you see success with one approach versus the other?
You know, at this moment, we've seen, because I would say this, the CNI space is so, it's maturing so rapidly and it's still pretty young. I would say we've seen the most success with, you know, components, batteries, inverters, you know, that are coming in together, at least designed by the manufacturers, designed and maybe not necessarily, you know, listed as a complete system, but they've already done their engineering work. They've already done all of their communication protocols. And so it is as simple as, you know, get everything talking to each other and they're all speaking the same language. So definitely seen more success with that, but we are seeing the trend. And this is, you know, after talking with folks at the show, I feel like the trend is, you know, we have our batteries, we have our inverters, we have, you know, whichever, you know, maybe the BMS is part of the battery system, but we're bringing those together, trying to be a little bit more agnostic. I heard that a lot on the show floor, you know, we're battery agnostic, we're inverter agnostic. And the idea being they're not hitching themselves to any one horse, you know, any one cart, and being able to work with multiple folks, which makes a lot of sense business-wise. It's a matter of, though, you as an installer, you as an engineer, do these really work together? And what does it take to get these to work together? Do you have to be, you know, you have to learn a whole new language in terms of communications?
Yeah. So is that something that you, is that a service that you provide, though, helping to select technology?
Yeah, a lot of our clients, when we, you know, especially doing feasibility studies, part of our output is, here's what we're recommending. And we're going to recommend that you put in these components. And it's because we've seen them work together. We've had systems that we've done ourselves and they work, they go together. Mm-hmm. Or we've done our due diligence and we've talked to the manufacturers. And yes, we can feel very confident that these components are going to work together. So that is definitely a big part of what we're doing more and more in terms of, you know, customers coming to us and like, they know that they need backup or they know that they need to do those grid support services, but hey, how do we get there?
Yeah. So in this middle market, let's say a 500 kW or megawatt battery, you know, a megawatt battery today, lithium iron phosphate is kind of the middle of the road. You can get a 2 hour or 4 hour solution. So 2 to 4 megawatt hours of batteries, or battery energy. And how many on one, is it on one or two hands, the number of manufacturers that you might recommend to a customer looking for that kind of megawatt solution?
At this moment, it's probably one hand that we are, you know, we're looking at and we are feeling confident in and understanding that those components are working well together, playing well together, talking together. So definitely growing. And, you know, you walk the show floor at any of these larger shows and you'd think it would be, you know, hands and feet kind of numbers that we're talking about, but it's still relatively small.
Yeah. All right. There's a lot of other stuff we should probably touch on. We have limited time here. We've got, we'll go for another 5 minutes maybe, but what else would you like to shine a light on? You have your fingers in many things. I'm glad you mentioned being on the code committee. You're very involved in Article 7706, the energy storage section of the NEC. You're deep into education and training. Just check out the website, mayfield.energy. But what else would you like to talk about, Ryan?
Yeah. So I think for me, you know, you mentioned earlier, Tim, the, you know, how much the industry is growing and how much, you know, we're going to be a major percentage, we being the solar plus storage plus wind being, you know, 90% of the grid. And for me, a big part of that is, you know, it's rooted in the education and that's where, you know, I'm hold near and dear for me. So getting folks, it's going to be a matter of people, right? So we can achieve those things as long as we have the people to actually be putting this stuff in the ground and putting it in the ground in such a way that they are knowledgeable, confident, and being able to even go so far as, you know, testing and doing operations and maintenance. So those are things that I'm really focused in on, our company's really focused in on, is the education piece so that these systems are working and they're working the way they're supposed to. And so that's, you know, for me, education is going to conferences and delivering a class, talking about code, saying, hey, to install this properly, here's the codes, here's how you're going to apply the codes. but it's also working with manufacturers to put out content, put out information, sometimes, you know, specific for products, but as we've seen, that can be translated across the industry. So really for me, it's kind of educating people, and it's kind of a multi-pronged way of meeting people, educating them where they need to be, and helping them understand the key components. So, you know, what that means for an O&M operator of a 5-megawatt farm is going to be different than what it is for, you know, what somebody on the residential or C&I space is, but it's still important in all those cases.
Yeah. Yeah. It's still a little bit of the Wild West in the solar and storage. And I mean, I'm surprised how many installers I still meet who are gun shy about storage. They've maybe dipped their toe in the water and had a bad experience. And yeah, there are problems with certain products. Okay. That is the nature of technology. It has to go through a maturation process. Batteries are not new though, and they're well over 100 years old. The first, you know, vehicles were EVs. So I think that, you know, we truly are on the doorstep of a time when batteries are going to become super common. And mm-hmm. and this is across the board, from residential to commercial to industrial, and of course grid scale. Here in Illinois, you know, we have coal plants that are being shuttered and replaced with solar and batteries. That's how good the technology is. But
yeah, so yeah, like you're saying, you're seeing utilities move towards it, require it. You know, we have some programs out there now where you have to have storage included with it. We have some here in the Northwest where the local utility is saying we have a grant program, but yeah, we're only going to do that if storage is included as part of that program. So yeah. Definitely there seeing the
let's shine a light, I guess, on the list of places geographically where we see the most activity right now. I'll start the list, and then you can finish the list, because you have a much longer tail of knowledge there. But Hawaii would be an early adopter, right? Absolutely. You know, their attachment rate for solar now is nearing 100%. California, major incentive for batteries now, as they've devalued the value of solar, but solar and batteries does have tremendous value. And there's a lot of grid problems with fires and wind, et cetera, that, sure, you know, inspire people to be thinking about batteries. Then you have places like New York and Massachusetts that have battery incentive programs. Vermont was an early adopter of battery incentive programs. Here in Illinois, we have a nice incentive program. It is going to become more robust over time. There is new legislation in the works here in Illinois, in my home state. And then Texas, I note that there's a lot of grid scale storage happening in Texas, as much grid scale storage as there is grid scale solar. And Texas has now eclipsed California on an annual basis of the amount of solar going into the state of Texas. So there's a short list. Now, what are the next like five states where you see a lot of solar and storage happening?
So, you know, I'll just kind of maybe even a little bit broader. So the Midwest for sure, you know, Illinois, we're starting to see things in, you know, like Wisconsin, Minnesota, we're starting to see, you know, us personally see some things going on there.
Yep.
Where we're seeing a lot of, because of our focus on the C&I space, we're seeing a lot of folks, you know, Northwest, you know, where we were you know, born out of is a big one as well. Just that resiliency aspect and people making those prepared, making themselves prepared. So we're seeing a lot of those kind of natural disaster areas, you know, the Southeast kind of Florida type locations where people are, there are definitely those applications. And then, you know, we haven't done a whole lot, but looking to do more, Puerto Rico, for example. So those are some of those locations that we're seeing that, you know, it's growing. And a lot of that is based around the resiliency aspect. You know, Oregon and Washington, we're starting to see the same thing that California has in those public safety power shutdowns. And so they're available for the utilities. And then of course that just means people are going to be without power. So it's up to them to figure out how to make it last through those times.
You didn't mention Colorado. What's going on in Colorado?
You know, Colorado, that's a great one. It's not a market that we're, you know, actively trying to do more in there. You know, I don't know the exact policies that are driving things in Colorado at the moment, but we definitely, you know, there's plenty of solar going on in Colorado. It's the storage part that we personally haven't seen, but not to say that that's not going on.
And what about like Arizona, Nevada, Utah?
You know, those states, from what I've seen, you know, a little slower on the adoption. Arizona, definitely there's some larger scale projects that have happened. And it always seems to be that the, I'm not sure if the utilities, you know, how they integrating solar specifically in, but now storage always seems to be kind of a push and pull dynamic with the utilities there, similar to what we're seeing in California now.
Got it. So in our last minute together, Ryan, what do you have to say to energy professionals about the future of solar and storage? And clearly you're biased, as am I, sure. But yeah, I'm just curious, like when you're talking to, let's say a PVIP, right? Someone who's well-established in the solar industry, but for whatever reason may not have had much exposure to battery storage. What is the pathway to get more knowledgeable?
So, yeah. So you mentioned some of the great ways. So my message kind of is to those, you know, the NABCEP certified installer who maybe isn't doing storages, you know, that's definitely, you need to be doing storage. You need to be feeling comfortable with storage. That is the way that we're moving. That's the industry. That's the future of the industry. It's almost the present of the industry. And so in order to, you know, truly get up to speed, you know, of course, you know, education is going to be one of my first things, education from ourselves. You mentioned some great organizations. HeatSpring, SEI is another one that I threw out there earlier. So there's organizations out there that are, you know, trying to educate, you know, speaking with folks, going to shows, understanding those kinds of things. And then, you know, quite honestly, one of the other big things is engaging with partners who do have that experience and being able to help you. So it's, you don't have to go about it alone. There's people out there that are, you know, helping. And so, you know, there's ourselves, of course, and then there's other, you know, firms out there that have that experience and can help provide that path and make things better for you, especially on those early projects.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned partners. You know, one of the partners I highly recommend, and he's going to be coming on the show again here, is Intelligent Generation. A gentleman named David Braun is their head of business development, or Mark Thrum. Mark has been on the show. And, you know, if you're working in PJM or MISO or even Northeast ISO, a partner like Intelligent Generation is incredible for identifying the value stack. And they're a platform for, you know, software as a service platform that makes the battery talk to the facility and talk to the grid. And it's different in every market, though. They're, you know, I don't have a national go-to. I know STEM works nationally, but they're very heavy in the California market. And then folks like yourselves are, I mean, I don't know. Are you also recommending partners like the Intelligent Generations of the world?
Yeah, for sure. And so if there's, you know, that financial aspect, as we've noted earlier, that's a really big part of it, making sure that that's being understood and that's being fulfilled. And so understanding what are those, you know, what are the programs for the utilities? What are they looking for? What do they require? And so, you know, manufacturers aren't always going to know that because it's, as you just noted, it's so diverse across the different regions. And so finding those folks who know those regions and know those utilities, that's a, you know, finding those partners is a really key part of this.
You might be wondering, how do C&I solar PPAs get financed? For many, it remains a mystery. For others, there's Conductor. Conductor Solar helps hundreds of developers and EPCs find investors, close transactions, and collaborate effectively. With competitive bids from high-quality partners, Conductor makes sure you and your customers get the best PPA deal every time. Free to use for developers and EPCs? Visit conductor.solar today. Yeah. We're going to have to do a part two, I'm afraid, on the value stack of solar and storage, because this is a big topic. But I want to thank Ryan Mayfield for coming on the show today. Please check out all of our content at cleanpowerhour.com. Reach out to me on LinkedIn. I love hearing from my listeners. And give us a rating and a review on Apple and Spotify. Just go to cleanpowerhour.com. You can click on the Apple or Spotify link and then give a review right there. And tell a friend. That's probably the most powerful way you can help others find the show, is just talking it up. So I really appreciate that. And I'm Tim Montague. Let's grow solar and storage. Thank you, Ryan.
Thanks, Tim. Appreciate it.
Hey, listeners. This is Tim. I want to give a shout out to all of you. I do this for you twice a week. Thank you for being here. Thank you for giving us your time. I really appreciate you and what you're all about. You are part and parcel of the energy transition, whether you're an energy professional today or an aspiring energy professional. So thank you. I want to let you know that the Clean Power Hour has launched a listener survey, and it would mean so much to me if you would go to cleanpowerhour.com, click on the About Us link right there on the main navigation that takes you to the About page, and you'll see a big graphic, Listener Survey. Just click on that graphic, and it takes just a couple of minutes. If you fill out the survey, I will send you a lovely baseball cap with our logo on it. The other thing I want our listeners to know is that this podcast is made possible by corporate sponsors. We have Chin Power Systems, the leading three-phase string inverter manufacturer in North America. So check out CPS America. But we are very actively looking for additional support to make this show work. And you see here our media kit with all the sponsor benefits and statistics about the show. You know, we're dropping two episodes a week. We have now over 320,000 downloads on YouTube, and we're getting about 45,000 downloads per month. So this is a great way to bring your brand to our listeners. And our listeners are decision makers in clean energy. This includes project executives, engineers, finance, project management, and many other professionals who are making decisions about and developing, designing, installing, and making possible clean energy projects. So check out cleanpowerhour.com, both our listener survey on the About Us and our media kit, and become a sponsor today. Thank you so much. Let's grow solar and storage. The Clean Power Hour is brought to you by CPS America, the maker of North America's number one three-phase string inverter. With over 6 gigawatts shipped in the U.S., the CPS America product lineup includes three-phase string inverters ranging from 25 to 275 kW. Their flagship inverter, the CPS250-275, is designed to work with solar plants ranging from 2 megawatts to 2 gigawatts. The 250-275 pairs well with CPS America's exceptional data communication, controls, and energy storage solutions. Go to chinpowersystems.com to find out more.